Today on You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, we are discussing the new movie, A Man Named Otto, in this, the first edition of Film Club. So yes, everybody listening, my name is Silas Lindenstein. I am your host of this program, this podcast, this video cast. And as you may know from the website and reviews before, often I review movies on this show. I review them on the podcast. I have more reviews up on the website, ones that aren't, I am not able to get to record a video for, or an audio discussion for, or an audio review rather. And I have had a couple editions that I've called discussion episodes, like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Another one that was sort of the formation of this idea I wanted to do, which I'm now calling Film Club, where I ask people, what movies meant a lot to you? Tell me what meant a lot to you. Give me three movies that meant a lot to you, or your favorite movies. They moved you in some big way in your life. And people sent me those three movies, and I picked one. And then they came on the podcast to discuss. So instead of just calling them discussion episodes, I'm calling them Film Club. And so this is the first official Film Club, and I am discussing a movie that just came out in the theaters, but it's already one of my guests' favorite films. It's called A Man Named Otto. It's A Man Named Otto. It stars Tom Hanks, and it was just released in January, middle of January. I saw a screener for it because they wanted to squeeze in for the awards. I saw it like December 31st. So technically was made available limited theaters, so it does not seem like it garnered anything, but you'll hear me discuss the book, the film in detail. It's based off of a book. People may be familiar with that. And there was a Swedish film, and this is a remake of it. And yes, and so on my show was a longtime friend, Wake Loire. Wake Loire is a parent, comedian, storyteller, and owner of Curious and Kind in Almont, Ontario. Their favorite place to be is a dark cinema surrounded by people enjoying a movie together, but separate. They came on to discuss this film with me, and they are also coming back to discuss another one that I'll tell you about later. I have several of these already recorded, and I'm going to be releasing them weekly, Film Club. So I will also tell you like a week ahead of time what the next one is. So maybe over the weekend you could listen or watch the movie and then come back and listen to the show. But this one you won't, because it's a surprise. So this is full of spoilers. So if you did not see A Man Named Otto yet, and you want to and don't want to be ruined by the film, By the review, go ahead and save this, come back, bookmark it, come back later and watch it and listen, whichever format you are watching, listening. If you are watching this, know that I have a podcast version of this, audio only. And if you are just listening to this, know that there's a video podcast, a video cast, either on the site, you're watching a movie.com, or the YouTube channel, You're Watching a Movie. So One of those you could check out and subscribe. Please subscribe whichever platform you're watching this in, and that will help me immensely, and it'll help the popularity of Film Club and the reviews exponentially. It'll go everywhere. And leave a review if you could. I appreciate it. I would appreciate it. And I appreciate you for listening. So, so we're going to take a little break, and forgive us. I know this is a little sporadic, but I do need you to forgive us. This is the first episode. Not the first episode I recorded. The format is switching as it goes. I think I forgot to introduce the movie in the beginning, and so then I started talking about it later. So you know, it'll all work itself out in time. But it's the Tom Hanks film, A Man Named Otto. So that's what it is. You can look up the description or just wait for us to talk about it, 10 minutes after we start talking about it. It's about a grumpy man in a neighborhood who wants to end his life. It's not a spoiler. That's not a spoiler, because that's basically the plot of it. And neighbors move in and start delaying what he's trying to do. It makes it interesting. So there, I guess you don't have to wait. I just summed it up for you. Anyway, here it comes. Wake Loire joins me for this film club edition of You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein. In the theaters you find this, so go on and press play and rewind this. This speech it is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference, love. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein. In the theaters you find this, so go on and press play and rewind this. This speech it is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.
Are you in northern? Wait,
Where am I? Eastern
or western?
I'm
Canada.
Right now I'm near the national capital of Ontario, like of all of Canada and of Ontario. So I'm right between Toronto and Ottawa.
Okay, that's eastern.
Is my Canadian accent
that's
back?
That's eastern.
It's technically eastern. It's the population center of Canada. I'm originally from Manitoba up north, and that's like literal center of Canada, and people are like, no, and you're like, yes,
you just played the game mock the dumb American, because I said, is that east or west, and then you gave me a location as if I would know.
The national capital of Canada, do you know it? Canadian, I did
until you said it.
Ottawa?
Like I would have
Ottawa.
I think I would have guessed that.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because
like
it's
in a
like
multiple choice, I think I would have got it. Because I think I would have said, well, it's not Toronto because it should be.
Right.
Because it's bigger.
Yes.
Just like
well,
it should be
it.
New York, right? Like, why?
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
then you go, wait, it's a smaller place.
I watched Hamilton, and now I know why Washington, D.C. is the capital of America, right? Like, yeah, they didn't make it in New York because New York was the financial center, and how could they? And they didn't make it in Virginia because, woo.
Yeah.
It would have been a different world.
Yeah.
So they were just like, how about this little tiny place that no one cares about?
Well, but he also maneuvered it to be there.
Yes, he did. He did.
Rather than, like, we said it's because you can't have that in the biggest city. It's meant to be a separate entity. It was like, no, it's because I'm back deal wheeling and dealing. That's why.
Yes. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
And here's a reason.
Yeah. Ours, I think, was because there was two rivers, and so it was easily defensible if someone were to come attack us, say like America or something.
But Wake, the movie that we're discussing,
is
not
is
Canadian.
Actually, no, it's
I don't
not
know.
Canadian. Okay.
It's not. A Man Called Otto.
Yes.
Is actually based, I think, off a German book. I'm going to look that up.
It's
is
definitely.
That right? Is that right?
I don't think it's German. I think it's probably Eastern European of some sort. Let's look it up before we can be educated.
Huh?
I read the book a long time ago, and then I watched the original movie a long time ago.
This is my story of A Man Called Otto that I'm going to tell you on how I watched it.
Okay.
Because A Man Called Otto, starring Tom Hanks. So yes. I got a screener for this, like as a, it was a for consideration screener of for your consideration. Oh, it's a Swedish film.
Swedish, yes.
Swedish film. Mm-hmm. That's right. I remember that now. But it was I got it for your consideration for awards, right? But I didn't get it till like December 31st, which was ridiculous because at this point, everyone kind of has ideas of who they're voting, going to nominate for stuff. And like, yeah, December 30th, I got a limited release just to qualify. They should have just waited for the next year to put it out. I think it was too late at this point for award season. And I don't think it got nominated for anything. So there you go. But I'm like, Tom Hanks film. I'm all in. Whatever. Yeah, I'll see. I don't know anything about this. I never heard of it. Never heard of the book. And I'm telling my wife as she's about to go to bed because I'm going to watch something. And she says, I said, yeah, it's A Man Called Otto. And she's like, oh, that's like my dad's favorite book. Oh, that is such a funny book. And I was like, oh, really? Yeah. Like, yeah, it's a real con. Like, I was like, okay, I don't want to know too much about it. All right. And then I watched the movie. And then the next morning I go, what the hell were you talking about? I'm turning on like, oh, what's this? Return to Bosom Buddies? What is this? A Man Called Otto? What kind of hijinks is he about to get into? And I was like, honey, it's about a man trying to like kill himself and keeps getting around. She's like, oh, I don't think I got to that part. I was like, that's the beginning of the story.
Yes.
Honey. And I'm telling her these things and she's like,
it is funny though.
I don't remember that part. And I'm like, well, I was like, that's the main, that's the through line of the story is he wants to kill himself. And you tell me, so I was ready for a comedy.
Right.
And I guess, and it's kind of funny that he just keeps doing it and things happen. But
things
like,
happen. Yes.
Well, but it's not when you say a Tom Hanks comedy, it's not what I think of.
I think I was prepared because I had seen the original movie and read the book. For it, but I actually forgot that was the premise of the movie because it had been so long. I just remembered the family that moved in next door and how heartwarming it was and how they like got him to open up. I remembered him being a curmudgeon. I did not remember him being a curmudgeon with a death wish. And so I got to kind of watch it for the first time again.
Yes.
And Tom Hanks, I haven't liked him in a lot of things recently.
Okay.
I saw Elvis. And maybe that guy was a terrifying, horrible human that he played. Yeah. But it was awful to watch.
Tom Hanks' first villain role, I think.
Yeah, maybe that's it, right? Where it's like he transgressed and I was not ready for Tom Hanks to be such a horrific human being. Go ahead.
For the people who have not seen this, but despite that they're watching the listening to the discussion podcast of it, let me break this down.
Absolutely.
Real quick. A Man Called Otto, it's a 2022 comedy drama film directed by Mark Forster, so they call it a comedy drama. I think it's a little more drama. From a screenplay by David Maggi, it's the second film adaptation of the 2012 film called A Man Called Ove.
I think Ove. Maybe.
Ove? Okay, that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Which was written by Fredrik Backman, an American remake of the 2015 Swedish film of the same name, written and directed by Hans Holm.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first movie I remember being very good.
Okay. It's in Swedish, I imagine. So.
But
you're international, so you probably read.
I love subtitles. I love films. Me some subtitles. Absolutely.
The film stars Tom Hanks in the title role with Mariana Trevino, Rachel Keller, and Manuel Garcia Rolfo. It had a limited release December 30th, 2022, before a wide release January 13th. And it's so far received mixed reviews and gross 55 million. What's the log line? I want a log line. I don't want this description of the plot. I love when the films, like the plots they put on IMDb, don't even describe it.
Oh my gosh. I don't think people should be, they just like write exactly what happens out.
Well,
that's Wikipedia.
Otto is a grump who has given up on life following the loss of his wife and wants to end it all. When a young family moves in nearby, he meets his match in quick-witted Marisol, leading to a friendship that will turn his world around.
Yeah, effectively. Sure.
Yeah, that. You know what's funny? I forget which movie it was that blew my mind. I forget if it was it might have been a Marvel film.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I came home and I was like, hey, no spoilers to anybody, but the film isn't even what the description is. It's a different film.
Yes.
I think they were so like trying to hide the plot of the film.
Right.
I was like, that's not the film.
Yes.
It's a different thing. And I thought that was wonderful. I was like, that's not the film. It's a different film. Like, oh my gosh.
I do love going into a film not knowing anything about it. That's sort of my favorite way to go in. But it's so rare these days to be able to do that because trailers and log lines. And
it's one of my favorite things about being a critic right now.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Screeners. I miss screeners.
Screeners. And then I don't see, because I'm not at a movie theater, I don't see the commercial. Because I'm streaming more things. Mm-hmm. I don't see commercials as much.
Yes.
I really, well, it's a gift and it's a blessing and a curse because sometimes I don't know things have come out. But so I knew nothing. I had no idea a Tom Hanks film was coming out. So I picked it up to watch and had no idea. And
I can imagine going into it and being like, it's such a lovely movie. This description, my wife thinks it's a comedy. I'm ready for anything. Yeah. And then the very first scene.
I have told people that one of the most exciting things I do is the Seattle International Film Festival's secret festival where they air movies that are secret and they don't tell you anything about them. Ooh. They just tell you the runtime.
Yes.
They come out the runtime and they say, hey, we were going to show this, but it got pulled. Rights got pulled because they want to premiere it at Edinburgh, but we're playing it anyway. So here it is.
What? That would be and my favorite thing ever.
So you might know the genre. They don't always tell you the genre.
Yeah.
And so you're just discovering what a movie is as you're watching it. And it tells you what it is, right?
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing because like sometimes I'll watch stuff that say it's a thriller and I'm watching and go, this is not a thriller. Who's this a thriller?
Yeah.
Maybe a psychological drama. Some people just throw them in to try to, cause they're like, I don't know where to put this film.
Well, the genre, so I feel like we're in an age of like
very genre.
Genre bending. Like, and we had to, right? Because it's really boring. Like if you're able to predict the entire movie based on its genre.
Yeah. Or as the woke say, trans drama.
Trans. Oh, do they?
Genre. I blew the joke.
You did blow the joke. Just sitting with a non-binary trans
genre,
person. Like,
trans genre. John. It's too close. Someone... on. You know what? It's too close because then it makes me say, I feel like I'm mispronouncing the actual word.
Absolutely.
So my brain's like, say no, no.
No.
Yeah. You know what? This is why I stopped doing comedy, for one. just slips out of my... But this book. Okay, so you like the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a long time ago when I read it. I used to work in a bookstore, so I read the books first generally, and then I would see the movie after. Yeah.
Which is always a little disappointing.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes the movie takes out all the crap that the editors didn't take out of the book. Let me say it. Like, a lot of movies say the Neverending Story better than the book.
Oh, really?
Mm. The second half is just recursive philosophical German nonsense.
So the Neverending Story novel is too long?
It's too long. It's like, too long. It should be cut.
Is that how they got the title?
Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. That is a good joke.
Were they like,
because it is. It feels never ending. I read it when I was 15.
Holy shit.
I didn't understand half of it. I tried to read it to my child because I was like, we watched the movie. Let's read the book. No, the movie is so much better.
Mm.
Yeah, it is beyond. I have a copy, like a real copy of it. And someone made me like the Neverending Story with like the leather front and the Orin and everything. And people come in and they pick it up because I have a little shop and I don't sell the book and they get really mad. But I'm like, no, just go show your kids the movie because it's really good and it's really well done. And they nail every single note in that movie. Yeah. The book is not good.
Okay, I won't read it.
Don't.
I didn't know it was a book until today. So
Neverending Story.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. See, I just bring me on. About and I'll tell you read, which movies were
when
books.
There's a book about somebody reading a book.
That's what
I'm baffled. I'm just baffled by that
recursive nonsense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But back
How does the movie hold up to the book, though? This movie.
Oh, this movie? Yeah, it's great. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it does it justice. I think it was meant to be a movie. Right?
Really?
Definitely. Absolutely. Some people write books.
Mm-hmm. I've wondered about that. I've wondered if more writers are writing. I know one of my problems with novel writing is that I write too much dialogue.
Right. When you're really writing a movie then. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, I just need to do a screenplay here.
Yes, absolutely.
But like, well, For a long time, I didn't know what I was really wanted to do was probably I just need to write treatments. Because I'm like, I have ideas of like, oh, some dialogue here. And now I'm going to describe what happens real fast until we get to more dialogue that's important. That's what I should be writing.
Yes.
Until I can figure out how to make the dialogue drive it. And how was Tom Hanks? You did enjoy him in this?
I loved him. Yeah, okay. I really felt, excuse me. I really felt that he harnessed his inner curmudgeon. And he still had that like little, you could see that Tom Hanks was going to come out at some point, that like light and joyfulness and stuff. But yeah, he nailed like just being a real, not kind person in the beginning, sort of, I mean, closed off, right? I think yeah, they do, and I'm going to say as a self-diagnosed autistic person, like I came to much later, that they are coding him as autistic, right? Like he's not, well, because you watch him interact with his wife in the former things, right?
Yeah.
And he is very specific and he is very attached to some of the things and he is kind of incapable of communicating without her. They've coded him sort of as like an undiagnosed autistic person, I think, with some trauma in his background. That's what I would feel like, because he's misrecognizing social cues over and over and over again.
Okay.
Right? As opposed to like him being mean, because he does have a good heart. He wants to help.
I thought he was just a man.
Just a man. No, I don't think so.
Miss the clues.
No.
Just a clueless man.
No, like if you look at him as a younger person, right? Like he follows her because she dropped a book to give her back the book. Which, and he's doing it, but it doesn't have a creepy feeling to it. It has a very like inner child feeling to it, right? Like he's not doing it to hit on her. He's doing it because he saw this person drop a book. His instinct was, I need to return this book to her. And then he goes and he gives her the book back. And he doesn't have any expectation of a reciprocal sort of male like thing where like, if you were a man in a 1980s movie, no.
Mm-mm. You don't think he...
No, I don't. But maybe it's because I'm reading him as autistic.
I'm saying if she wasn't attractive, I don't know that he would have ran her down to get the book back.
You don't think so?
That's what I was reading.
I think that's what the filmmaker was putting on it for sure. Absolutely. Totally. The filmmaker was like making it so like she's beautiful, so he is following her. But if you read his actual actions, he wasn't hitting on her. He was just giving her a book back and doing like this like big act of sort of like thoughtfulness and then being like, what do I do now? Right?
Yeah.
Now that she has the book, I'm supposed to talk to her? I don't know. Right? Like I really do believe that there's a lot of like coded autism in so many movies where it's like, oh, they're just quirky.
Here's a funny thing. I was talking to my wife last night about neurodivergence.
Yes.
With me as a potential ADHD.
Good one.
Well, I'm not diagnosed, so I'm not. Well, yes. Which I'm also like, you know, there's the spectrum of neurodivergence.
Absolutely.
Right? But. Mm-hmm. I was saying, I don't know at what point I feel like there's more neurodivergent people. So at what point are they the norm?
Yes, and we are the norm. Yes,
and the what is seen
it's
as
holistic.
Norm is actually neurodivergent.
I think
because you don't over-explain things.
My partner and normal. I talk about that all the time. It's like, that we all are neurodivergent, right? It's just that the world is built for a certain kind of person. The people who make eye contact, the people who can focus,
weren't doing art
for 6 hours and work. Yeah. So because those are the productive people, right? The factory
8 hours.
People.
Yeah.
The people who needed. Yeah. But I mean, like, think about like musicians who spend their entire life working on one song, or like scientists who love like tardigrades and they just research these tiny little water bears. Like those people are on a spectrum of like hyper focus that isn't holistic.
So here's my problem is that those who are the people I surround myself with. So I've never seen it as odd.
Yes, no, me neither. As outsiders and weirdos. Yes.
It's recent, and I've been discovering and watching a bunch of videos because of a friend that I'm like, and then it was like, that's normal. What are you talking about?
Yes,
and then I'm
absolutely.
Talking to some folks and going like, they're like, no, I don't think most people do that. Like, really?
Yes.
And me realizing as people are describing their issue that they're dealing with, and I'm just laughing because I was like, I thought everyone did that.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
That's interesting. I'm gonna start looking at that in movies now. Like, is that I'm curious if that's even a conscious by the writer.
Yeah.
Are they meaning that, or is that just how they interpret?
Right. Or is it how people? I interpret it as an autistic person?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's because we do like I have a group at the little shop that I have, and like we're almost all autistic people. A lot of us have ADHD. Some of us have OCD. We have lots of letters behind our names, but we didn't finish college. But it's just like we see it and we're like, but hey, you love this character in this movie. Why not us? Why are you taken with this charming, weird girl who like does all this strange thing like Garden State and like the Natalie Portman character who's like flighty and flaky and like weird and needs a helmet and stuff, but like you're not friends with my friend Lindsay. Like, what is wrong with you? Right? So it's like I feel like that writers generally probably people who can focus on a book for a really long time and like get into characters are probably on the neurodivergent spectrum anyway.
Interesting.
Like, that we're making
so the people who writes the sci-fi films in like the or not the sci like the sci-fi channel films, you know, the ones that are all the same and 20 they probably wrote it in a half hour.
Yeah,
they're the normatives.
Yeah, right,
because they're just writing crap that's
just
thrown out together.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, I'm mulling over a plot line for 15 years before I start writing it. Like,
totally, exactly. Yeah, I have. I'm doing a screenwriting course this year.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, so
Man Called Otto.
Otto.
Yes.
Yeah, but Otto.
Yeah.
So, like his performance, I had mixed feelings to start. Like, I don't know why I felt like in the beginning, I was like, I feel like Tom Hanks is acting. Like, that I could tell he's acting. But I was like, is it because it's just such a different character? And like, he's just, it felt like he's just putting on a voice. Why is he just putting, he's just using some different voice now. Like, but it didn't like that it wasn't, didn't feel owned in like a, like, you know how, like Gary Oldman.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a character actor.
Right. You don't know that that was him until like someone will say, oh, I love Gary Oldman. And you're like, who? What?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
That was him?
Yeah.
I didn't feel this transformation at first.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say it definitely grew on me.
Yeah.
As he went on with it.
Absolutely.
And I started accepting him. And I did start saying, I think this is me. I think this is me wanting to see someone I'm familiar with play the same role again and not letting him have an accent or do stuff, because he was very consistent. He was very thoughtful. He was nuanced, as he's like, we see he didn't need to say things for us to know what his intentions were or what he wanted out of the scene or from other people. We get it. He's very specific. So he's really, I thought he was like doing a great job as an actor.
Yeah.
And
Tom Hanks acting. It's bizarre.
Well, which is funny because I nominated him as best villain for the year for Elvis. Because I was like, I was like, I'm not liking him.
He made me feel existentially nauseated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he did. And I thought he did a great job in that. So this was the first thing I had seen him in since then. So I don't know why I wouldn't let him be an actor in this one as well.
Right.
But he was very specific. He was very good. He had those great scenes. The mom of the other family.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Marisol.
She'd be a lead, I think.
Yeah, she absolutely is. She carries a lot of the movie, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is? Oh, that's the wrong movie, Silas. That you're not wrong. You're on the wrong movie. Yeah, she had a great dynamic with it. I really liked She was such a good actor, and I wanted to know more, like,
what else has she done? I know. I was like, I really want to see her in something else immediately. That's how I felt after I watched her.
Where is she? Marisol. Right, yeah. Who is she? I'm looking her up right now.
Oh, you are great. Yeah, I felt like they kind of gave her husband in the movie just like it's like a nothing role, right? He's supportive,
yeah,
he loves her, he's a good dad, that's it. He's the you know, like, he's the one that they both can make fun of a little bit because he can't drive properly, and you know, he's the foil, right? And then they get to build a relationship, Otto and Marisol. Yeah.
You know what, this, I think that this appears to be her first like
major feature film.
Certainly that. She seems to, Once Upon a Time But Not Anymore, six episodes of that as Dolores in a TV show. Definitely first feature film. I think this may be the first English as the primary language film.
Oh,
that she's
really
done. Yeah. She's mainly, it seems to be, in Spanish speaking films.
Which makes sense, because she's obviously a very talented actor. Right. So yeah, she's done a lot of film and she's speaking in her second language and acting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's, I thought she was brilliant. Like,
so I think we'll
Tom
see.
Tom Hanks was good, but Marisol was great.
Yeah.
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 Like, unassuming at first, right? Kind of like, oh, yeah, she's bringing over food. But then she gets those scenes where she's just like, no, I'm setting a boundary here. Like, you're literally not.
You're not nice.
You're not nice. And I'm done. And you made me worry about you. And I'm done now. Right? Like, like, I cried so much in this movie. And I already knew what it was about. Like, I already knew the premise. I had read the book. I had watched the other movie. And it still got to me. This whole...
What is it, do you think, got to you? What was the primary thing getting to you? Was it...
community care, I think, like that, watching that little block look after itself against a villain, an actual villain, right? Like, these people are kicking old people out of their homes, right? Like, that, I think, was like, there's the small things, but it was like this sort of oppressive, actually what's happening in America and in Canada, that's people don't have housing. And there's this group trying to get rid of housing and put people in homes. And so, like, the idea that everyone was kind of being siloed away from each other. And then Marisol and her husband and her kids come into the neighborhood and go, and you realize that there was a community that existed pre Otto's wife dying, that then that we're missing something, right? Like, you could feel the sort of like the emptiness, and like the trans character, which they have a character in the, I think he was gay maybe in the other movie, but that was magical for me. Like, just to watch an actual character, like, that Otto's wife cared for this person. And so Otto transient, like, that he also cared for this person. And then that small, like, moments, those moments, I think, of watching, like, transness in film, in a major feature film, and like talking about the actual, like, struggle of being trans in the world, like, was beautiful. Plus, like, being an immigrant, is difficult, really difficult. And so just like all of the little tiny things, and then also like the really happy guy who just walks around the street, like, kind of, you think, you know, but he's definitely like, his capacity is limited. He, you know, he gets cared for by the older couple. Like, the cultural stuff, like, there's race, there's gender, there's capitalism, like, it takes on America in this weird, strange way, which I guess because I lived there for 6 years and now I'm back in Canada, and America and Canada aren't that different anymore, that it kind of felt a little bit like, whoa, it's the movie we need right now to remind ourselves that we can connect.
Do you think,
so maybe it was my feelings.
So I'm, man, I almost, I want to talk to somebody from Sweden.
If this
is, like, if it didn't feel altered from the original.
Right.
What was the feeling? Like, why? If it wasn't altered, like, is it reinforcing the sense of community in Sweden?
Yeah, or, probably.
Or,
I imagine.
Or is it that, what, or like, is he, okay, here's a question. Do you think he's represents the majority of people in a community right now? Or
the people,
cause,
well.
Because they're, the way they set it up, it almost seemed more like everybody was a community.
Yeah.
Except for him.
Right.
But here I wonder, is in America, is he more the norm in a community than he is?
Maybe, possibly. I mean, in cities in general, right? But that was like, where were they in A Man Called Otto? Was it in the Midwest?
Ish? Probably. Ish. Maybe. It seemed like the way the city block was made.
Yeah.
I wonder if they even said it in the anything. Trying to remember. It's the problem with watching a new movie and talking about it. I can't reference many things. Like I can only see as much.
We are going to talk about an old movie.
Sorry, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
It is Pittsburgh. Okay. Yeah. And so Pittsburgh is not the Midwest. Is that the East? For your Canadian listeners?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's it
probably,
did. It had, but it had like
straight,
a working.
You go straight north, get to Toronto. No, to Ottawa.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know where.
We're just above New York. So it's a working class population, it looked like, right? But like that neighborhood, it had a gate, but not an actual gate. It was just like, stop, don't go down this cul-de-sac.
Yes.
Right. It wasn't a gated community. It was like row housing, which is where I live in row housing. So it's like six places all together stacked. So it's for people who don't have a lot of money. So.
Well, yeah, I mean,
in the beginning, I imagine.
You don't want, well, they were all new houses. They all owned their homes. So.
Yeah, but they would own them from like the couple across the street and his wife and him had owned them since they were like in their 20s. And they're now in their like 70s. So that's like 50 years. Those houses are probably 50 years old.
Back when people could
buy houses.
Buy things.
Yes.
And obviously before redlining.
Yes.
Or after redlining. I don't know which.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't have redlining in Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh. Well.
You think they did?
I probably.
Yeah.
But not as bad.
As
but
in Oregon and Seattle. Yeah.
It is. I guess it's a pick your battle situation, because if you want to stay true to the scripts, the result of that would be a more white cast.
Yes.
But so if we alter the casts to bring diversity, which is needed to roles and everything
and
for views, it's not historically accurate.
Oh, right. Really? Okay. Well, gotcha.
Because, I mean, just the likelihood of somebody, you know, a black man being allowed, a black family being allowed in a white neighborhood if they've been there for like that long.
50 years. Yeah. Well, I was like, maybe they moved into a black neighborhood. You know, like.
I'm just judging off of the meeting, because they had that meeting. When
they did have
the
meeting.
Yeah. So.
You're right.
It's one of those subjects that I'm like, well, I don't. Yeah, I'm okay with it not being historically
correct.
Maybe accurate.
Oh, absolutely.
Or someone from Pittsburgh is going to go, hey, ass, we've always been better here. We didn't do that here.
It's possible in the East Coast, right? Yeah. Isn't that where like everything sort of like got better first?
Sort of. You know, it's weird. It's like Massachusetts is definitely, you know, Massachusetts was the first state in the union to allow gay marriage by law.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, birthplace of the revolution. It's a very racist state, but it's also progressive in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got this, it's got these puritanical values underneath a lot of things, but then they're also very not puritanical in a lot of ways. Like, it's things are very complicated. It's like, you know, like, I mean, there was a time that people were like Abraham Lincoln, right? Thought fundamentally slavery was wrong.
Wrong. Absolutely.
But did not think black people were equal.
Huh?
Like he was a total racist. He was absolutely Abraham racist. Lincoln.
Oh,
absolutely.
They did not teach me that in my American history class in Canada, obviously.
No, they did. No, he was a very he has got papers about saying, oh, yeah, well, they're not equal. But slavery is wrong.
Right. Okay. So no man should own another man was his thing. But
yes.
Also,
yeah,
y'all just shouldn't be able to sit next to me or whatever. Well, that's not cool, Abraham.
Lincoln. Not.
Yeah. I mean, our
Boston very much had the no black people are equal, but you shouldn't date my daughter kind of value. For me, I was fine to be a student leader and all. Like, that was great. Upstanding citizen there. But a little too dark for my daughter. Uncomfortable there. Mm-hmm. It's So you don't really know until it's probably city by city, neighborhood by neighborhood.
Right.
And that could have been Otto was the cool guy who was like, no, he's my friend. You shut up. And maybe they rumbled sometimes about it.
Right.
But basically kept it.
Well, it seems like the only thing they rumbled about was cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a very American moment where it was like Ford or Chevy. And I was like, this is what they fought over. But that was also where I was like, this is an autistic coding where it's like, I love this one thing and this one thing is the right thing and that's it. And so if someone likes a different thing, then that was their argument, which was just bizarre to me because I was like, I didn't
understand. That might be.
They had to write it in for the neurodivergent
in the rest of the world, but that's very
American. That's just norm here.
That's a very American attitude.
Chevy versus Ford.
Well, and then if you buy a Toyota, just flip, lose your mind.
Oh, yeah, right. We had Toyotas. were that was my dad's car. He loved the Toyota. So.
What do you think the overall lesson of the film is? Or what did you take away as a lesson from this?
I think it's that if you open up and actually let someone care about you or you care about people, that life is worth living. So community, that's what I was at the core, was that he thought he had lost everything. But when you let people in, you haven't. That life is worth living if other people are in it, I guess. Because grief, that grief is real, right? There's not a lot of movies who tackle grief in sort of that kind of, because it was tongue in cheek, right? How many times did he try to commit suicide in that film? Yeah. So many times, you know? And then I don't want to spoil
just do it. No.
Yeah. Well, that would it, but I like, yeah. And then that he warmed up that. Maybe that we should care about each other, that we should try a little harder to reach out to the people who seem
alone. I don't know. Alone. Yeah. I mean, you think, I mean, she definitely saved his life multiple times.
Over and over.
Just
without
by
knowing
offering
it.
A dinner or yes. by yeah. offering food. Yeah. Just, also, I was struck by how polite he was trying to kill himself. He was trying not to make a mess.
Well, that he didn't want to make a mess. Yeah. That he obviously cared about other people in that way, that he didn't want to ruin anyone's day by doing what he was about to do. Unless it was to argue about rope, that he was fine ruining people's day about tiny little things, but he didn't want the end of his life to be a mess for someone else to clean up.
Do you think if he had not lost his friendship with the neighbor?
Yeah, that he would have just kept going.
Yeah.
He would have had, because he would have had them. They would have been able to support him through his grief. But that was definitely, I think, a marker in his life where, they don't have each other. So he didn't have a male friendship. He didn't have any friends. It didn't seem because at work, that retirement party was hard to watch. They were just happy that he was leaving and kind of making fun of him, for being as consistent as he was.
Yeah.
Like ageism, racism, anti-immigrant sentiment, all of these things. It was disabled folks being shoved off. It was everything. They put everything in one movie and it still didn't feel like too much because it was just so real.
It's just so norm.
Exactly. It's just life, I guess.
You know, it's interesting. I was wondering because it had only been 6 months since his wife had passed and he was getting kind of pushed to retire.
Yes, absolutely. Forced into it.
Seemed like maybe a merger of something, but there was a merger of the business and they were going to get rid of people. So like, oh, you can take your pension now.
Exactly. Yeah. They bought him out. Yeah. But so he had nothing to live for. He had no wife. Right. And he had no job.
And I also wondered, so would he have, if he wasn't getting fired, basically, forced to retire, would he have had community there and been able to keep going?
Right. Like, but yeah, it didn't seem like he had community at his work anymore. Like he was the eldest, like they'd gotten rid of all of the older people. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, middle-aged people were just working and they didn't really care about the job. You know, I think he had like this old caring. He cared so much that he couldn't, you know, he was watching people leave their bikes. Places people were like throwing their recycling in the garbage, and I think he was just like so tired of caring so much, and like having no one to support him or to lighten his life. Like his wife seemed like the complete opposite of him, right, where she was just like joy and thoughtfulness and caring, that she was like his external organ for community and thoughtfulness, and like showed him how to be with other people. Because all he wanted to do was be in the army, right? And then he couldn't because of some sort of, his heart was too big. That was a great line. His heart was too big.
Tragic. the tragic his wife's story was
heartbreaking. Like they really, but I'm like, it didn't feel forced or unreal. It was weird that they didn't have him interacting with his wife when she was older in all of his memories. She's like in her 20s, except for when she's dying. You see him holding her hand, but you don't see her face or anything.
Well, I think when you're looking back, he's looking at his wife when he thought of her as the greatest, which he's never going to let go of.
Yes, absolutely.
And not that she's not great later on.
Well, but no, there's before the accident, after the accident, right? So
and I think there's because I think the flashbacks that we saw were purposeful in to show what led him to this.
Absolutely.
What led him to attitude.
Was for the audience and not for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, because I'm sure he's thinking about a million things in those instances.
Absolutely.
And remembering, but like, it's to like, why is he like he is?
Yeah.
And you see things happen and you go, I mean, I get it. I see why that happens. Just like when you watch My 600-Pound Life or Hoarders and you find out what happened to them and you're like, okay, yeah.
Makes sense.
No,
absolutely.
Yeah. Nope. Doesn't seem too far stretched now. Like how you got there.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, you didn't, until you had said it, and the community aspect hadn't hit me as much. And now I'm thinking more about my community. Like, I have such a great neighborhood that I'm in. Mm-hmm. Like, we've built miniature golf courses in front of our house, everybody. So, like, we can.
You're going to make me cry, Silas.
We have a great neighborhood now. And yeah. But I'm like, well, you know, I mean, what the timeliness of this, maybe the unintentional timeliness of a community built thing where. We don't, with COVID, right?
Yes.
Of isolating ourselves so much or keeping to our area, how important we found it to have a community.
Yes.
And to not feel alone.
Yes.
And,
I know. I'm sorry.
So like, you know, my wife worked in healthcare. And she, through the whole COVID ordeal, that's totally over now.
Oh, of course. It's so over.
Right. She, you know, she has an autoimmune disorder. She has lupus. And so for especially until the vaccine came, it was very much, she gets this, she's, good chance of dying,
yeah,
kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of time of me thinking about what would I do without her.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have kids that root you. They're like, they're anchors. So like, well, as long as you have kids, you can see why that can save you.
Oh yeah. And Otto, right? That was right. He did not.
Because
they
didn't
nearly
have kids
did.
Either because they almost
nearly
did.
Had it. But
so
they
he's like,
did.
I don't have an anchor to this world now.
Yes. Yeah.
And without a community, you don't. And I've thought about that with, you know, because my wife's lupus, it's not good right now.
I know.
It's in particular bad order. And so I do think about, we've been married 10 years now, together 12, and I've always known there could be at any point that I have 6 months left with her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's my whole life, right?
Yeah.
So my whole life with her. So I was talking about like, where do I balance the risk here of I don't want to go out and get something and bring it home to her and kill her.
Mm-hmm.
But she could also just get it on her own.
Yep.
And I could give it to her, or she can get it accidentally just from all of us taking care of ourselves, right? And then she's gone. But if I isolate myself, I don't have a community to lean on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So where do you balance the saving your loved ones versus like, well, if you're gone, then what's going to happen to me? I have my kids as an anchor, but they can't be, I can't be dependent on
children. No, you can't. Exactly. You
it's
have
not
to,
good
you
for
have
them.
To be, yes.
It's bad for them.
It's bad for them. Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. No, I know. I, during COVID, so my partner was in Seattle. So I have a partner.
Were you trapped? Were
trapped.
You separated?
So
by
they,
the...
so for 2.5 years.
For 2.5 years?
Yeah.
So our 2.5 years. That happened to our neighbor. Our neighbor, that happened to her. Her husband was just, he was a citizen, but he had just gone over to visit.
Yeah.
Like,
so
like
yeah,
he was
so
going to be gone 2 weeks and then he couldn't come back.
We moved back, me, because we have a really interesting situation. So I do live in row housing. I'm right next door to my children's father. So when I lived in Seattle, I was married. But for most of that time, I was non-romantically involved with my husband, right? We were like dating other people and raising our kids together and friends, best friends, right? We've known each other since we were 25 years old.
Yeah.
And so we raised our kids. And then I fell in love with this person. And we were together in Seattle for 2 years. And then my former husband decided that he would rather raise our kids in Canada because there was some guy in power that we were like, you know. And we weren't citizens. We had green cards. So we moved back to the small town where I had my children. The small town where I had worked at the bookstore. It's like Gilmore Girls. I don't know if you've seen Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
But Stars Hollow, it's this town. We have our mayor is adorable, actually, but we have like everything. It's people genuinely care about each other. They have town meetings. They like each other. They have little rifts. It's magical. And I had my kids here. And so we had like anchors, right? I'm from Northern Manitoba, but Almont, Ontario is one of the most magical places in the world. Yeah. And so I was like, where can I move back to where I can still be best friends with my former husband?
Yeah.
And no one's going to care or blink an eye, right? So
he
and I moved in next door to each other, but it takes a long time to get divorced, even if you agree on everything.
Well,
right? Yeah. So our house wasn't built in time. So we had to stay on an island together, the two of us in the house. And I had to stay with my 5-year-old in his bedroom, and my eldest had his own room, and my husband had his own room. But me and Joshy were bunking together. You know, so we did that for a year, and then I would visit my partner back and forth.
Yeah.
And then we were waiting for my house to be built. And then we had to wait to take possession of the house. You know, you're in real estate.
Yeah.
It's complicated. And then we had to figure out how I was allowed to buy the house, because it turns out that banks won't give you money if you get spousal support, because men don't pay spousal support often enough for it to be considered for it to be considered actual income. So even though I was making enough to own my own house based on just spousal support, they wouldn't give me a mortgage without my former spouse on my mortgage. We don't want to talk about.
You didn't have 2 years of history of it, right?
Right.
That's
I didn't have anything because I was moving back from, and I didn't have a job.
It's like self-employment.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. Like, because I think it's more that you need 2 years history of it happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like, could start, you know, a real estate agent. You can start making real estate. You can make $1 million in a year. But they don't know what's going to happen next year.
Absolutely. They don't know what's going to happen. It's not a consistent job.
But men have shown to be inconsistent enough.
That exactly. Like,
no, we can't count on him.
We can't count on it. But my former husband is super wonderful and is very consistent, pays child support. And
he's Canadian.
Yes, he is Canadian.
I mean, it's not... and,
but there's jerks everywhere. Yeah. But so we did that. And then COVID hits. I have a business. COVID hits. I own a venue. 2020, March. I'm in Vegas, March 10th, hanging out with my partner. And we come back here. And then March 13th, everything shuts down.
Yeah.
And they had left on March 11th. And then we didn't see each other until we've got lawyers and we had to get married for me, but I had to get divorced first in order to get remarried. Yeah. I was literally divorced for 8 days before I went to Vegas and got married and brought them back across the border. And then they couldn't work for 2 years, but for 2.5 years, I didn't see them. For 6.5 months, I didn't see them at all. Right. And it's COVID. I have my youngest child homeschooling.
You can't work for 2 years as a rule. Is that a rule?
Until you get your green card.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it takes a long time. Everything takes so long. Immigration, they gave up their whole life. They could have, if their business, if they worked for a company, I won't call anything right now, but their manager said, no, we're not going to send you to Canada to work. It was before COVID. Yeah. If COVID had been, then maybe they would have sent it. Them, you know,
we don't care, whatever, go.
Yeah, exactly. Go, yeah. Yeah, no, but everyone's remote. Working from nowhere now, right? Doesn't matter where you work from. But yeah, so they didn't have a job. They don't have a university degree. Canada's a meritocracy, hates people who are poor. I'm not even joking. It's awful.
It's Western civilization.
Yeah, so they're we just want the good people. So I feel it. The community aspect and not having and not going outside. I didn't go outside for 8 months. I had all of my deliveries. So I think maybe that's what it is. Maybe a man called Otto is this catharsis, this we're allowed to see each other again, but we don't know how to be around each other.
Yeah.
And how do we come back to that?
I think it's again, bad timing of the film. I do think that this should be a bigger film right now. I think it would hit a lot of nerves, and it probably will once it's I think once it starts streaming somewhere, because I think if you mistime the theaters right now, in particular, so few people are going.
Which is why I
go. To theaters. Yeah.
Because it's empty and beautiful.
Oh yeah, I know. It's a cursed. It's the most wonderful thing, but then a curse.
But also you're like, I really want movies to be around.
I want movies to do well, but the only blockbusters are making it. What's this going to mean?
I know.
Let's see, man, you hit all the, why did we really did this well?
Yeah. Thank you. Well, Sav. You know, I was so excited about being here
because I looked up because as I've been talking, I've realized, you know, what I was creating here was a sort of a private film club in a way. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, and so it's I need to look at this like a movie club, a book club. But for films, right?
For film, yeah.
And so I was looking up things to talk about in book club meetings. And then I had all these questions about themes and stuff.
Right.
And then I was I can use these as guideposts too, besides my review thing.
Yes.
And suddenly
I come from book club culture.
I used to work at a bookstore. I'm we answered all of these things that I would have said. But okay, I do what is a favorite? Do you have a favorite scene in the film?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one? What's your favorite scene?
I think probably the them all being around the gravestone at the end, when he brings everyone to come see his wife and introduces them. The cat, that he finally gets to show his wife that he's okay.
You're killing me right now.
I'm so sorry. It was just that's the moment. Oh. That's the moment for me where it's just I bawled because he was going to be okay. Yeah.
I was going to say a funny scene, but now that's go to the comedy.
Laugh in your ears.
Now I'm like, oh my God. Oh, that is a.
Yeah.
That was a good scene.
It was a good scene. Yeah.
It was, you know what? Also, I yelled at my wife about this being funny. I was like, you know, I don't need Hugh having really bad blood work right now while I'm watching this movie about a guy dealing with the loss of his wife.
His wife, no.
I was like, I was not prepared for this movie.
I know.
And obviously, I didn't think about the movie too much when I was preparing to go, like, I was like, yeah, I want to talk about that movie. And I was like, am I emotionally equipped to deal with this?
At least movie? You're with like an empathetic person.
It's like I forgot
person.
What it was about.
Yes.
I was like, oh yeah, the Tom Hanks is a grump. Oh, why? Oh, because his wife. Oh, shit. What am I doing?
Yeah, no, fair point.
Let's talk about Die Hard.
I do love, I'll come back and talk about it. I love movies. The fact that you are doing a movie podcast, and I was afraid when I sent you my movie podcast that you were going to be like, oh no. I don't want to do a podcast with them because I'm so emotional about movies. Like I literally, my podcast is mad about movies because I get so,
emotional.
You're
because I have a rough exterior.
Your reviews are like, mwah. They're like succinct and like thoughtful and you care about like all of the,
that's why I'm always late.
But you care, and like definitely care, but I am emotionally engaged with movies. Either if I hate them, I love to hate a movie. Like I love that feeling of like being so angry that they spent more time talking about like a sweater than the actual relationships in a movie, like Last Christmas or like 6 Feet Apart or like all of these movies that like just made me so mad that they focused more on like the surface level stuff and didn't do the characters. Like when you did, I didn't finish watching Empire of Light because I was so mad about it. I was just like, ugh. Like, oh no, you didn't know anything about race and it's okay for you to date a young black man and like, and your boss, like, ugh, so gross. It was so gross. I was so mad. Did you not, in Empire of Light, she was like the manager and then she was dating her employee. And
she was like a senior employee.
Maybe. Well, I mean, it was horrible. It was horrific. Yeah. The whole thing was horrific.
Well, yeah, but it was 1980.
No. But it feels like it shouldn't have been.
Chariots
of Fire
was coming out, right?
Yes.
So, I mean.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
I talked about it in my review.
I know. And it was like, a good review. And that's why I was like.
It's funny. My friend who saw it with, she told me, one of my friends who saw it, she's like, you know what? I like the movie a lot more after I read your review.
Yes.
Than when
I
she
would
left.
Go back and watch
she
it.
She was like.
I left just before she had a meltdown on stage because I was like, nope, not doing this.
And that's that movie though. But you know, I got it. See, that's my cheapness in me though. Like even if I've only left like one film ever. Mm-hmm. Like
once I started leaving them, Nope.
Yeah. I
gave myself permission.
I have turned stuff off, I guess. But if I pay for it, I'm staying.
Oh, really? I don't know.
I'm gonna hate watch this film if I I'm here for it. I don't know what would make me leave a film because it's even if it's bad, I'm like, oh God, I'm gonna rip this apart. So if I'm so bored,
the first movie I ever left was I think an Italian CIFF, like Seattle International Film Festival in Bellevue.
Really?
And it was like my third or fourth date with my partner.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like this. It was like billed as a superhero movie. I think he got like sludge put on him at some point, but it was like so horrific and so violent and so misogynist. And then the film stopped, trigger warning, sexual assault, on a rape scene in an elevator.
Jesus.
It paused in middle of it. And then I looked at my partner, whom I knew for like 5 weeks, and I said, and they said, we can leave if you want. And I was like, we can leave? And it never occurred to me that I could leave a movie.
That you could leave a movie? Yeah.
I think I left The Ring when I was a teenager because it was terrifying, The Ring, in the first 5 minutes I just left. But I didn't realize that I could just stand up and walk out. And I said to the people, the CIFF people, I was like, you might want to go check your film right now because it's paused in a very unfortunate moment.
So it was actually like the tape
frozen.
Broke or whatever. Like it really wasn't like an artistic choice.
No, frozen.
What a horrible...
It was horrific.
I'm like, oh my God.
Exactly. But because my partner and I, like that happened, anytime I'm in a movie where I'm just like, you know what? I don't actually need to be through this trauma moment. I will leave. I'll leave. And I'll watch it again, maybe on Netflix, where I can like kind of fast forward through the things that are unnecessary. But yeah, but like when the movies are good, like A Man Called Otto, like I should have brought extra Kleenex. I just wept. Wept and then laughed.
Well, you saw it and read it, so you should have been prepared a little.
I thought my heart was hardened. I thought my heart was hardened. I really did. I thought Tom Hanks can't do this.
You thought it was too big? You thought your heart was too big for this?
No, it was definitely too big. But I'm just like, I know it's coming, so like it can't get me.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Like horror movies. Like you know what the monster is.
I think that's the mark of a really good film, though, is that even though you know what's happening, the way they did it is what get you.
Yep.
So, I mean, in my reviews, I give us everything a love it, like it, or lose it. I would definitely give this a love it. I love the film. I regret not reviewing it now that I didn't write a review, but I was watching so many movies for award season. I was like, I'm not reviewing anything I don't have to.
Yeah.
But yeah, Man Called Otto might do that. Highly recommend. You can check it out. It's only the 20th. It's probably still in theaters.
It's probably still in theaters somewhere.
You know what? Yeah. I'm going to take back what I just said. It opened on the 13th. We're recording this on the 24th, and it's already made $55 million. That's not a bad theatrical release week for considering everything. So hopefully it plays well and lots of people see it. And I'm gonna have you you're gonna be, this one's gonna air first for sure, coming up, and that you're coming back to one of
to
your
do my very favorite,
favorite
movie in the world, but yes, I will talk to you about movies whenever, Silas, like you just tell
absolutely.
Me
okay yeah. Mm-hmm. So Wake, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference, love. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech, it is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.